Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. This week's podcast is brought to you by Hoosier Hempster Dispensary in New Albany, Indiana, and owners Joe and Kelly Lenny. You can find Hoosier Hempster Dispensary at HoosierHempster.com. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. On this week's podcast, we'll hear from Ian Laird. Ian is the CFO and General Counsel with New Leaf Data Services. But first, we're going to get started with Midwest Hemp Council Executive Director Jamie Campbell-Petty. Jamie, how you doing today?
Hi, Jason. I'm doing great. Thanks.
Well, great to have you on the program. Things zipping right along with the Midwest Hemp Council, and it's already time for the second annual Hemp at the Crossroads. It seems like we just had the first one not too long ago, and bam, we're back at it again.
I know. And I say it's not until February, and yet now we realize it's right upon us. So
right. Oh, yeah.
2020 has been very interesting, but here we go.
Yeah. The sooner we can get rid of 2020 and put it in our rear view, the much better I think we'll all be. So looking forward to February at the least. But now for the folks that are new to the program, new to the Midwest Hemp Council, new to hemp in general, tell us, Jamie, what the Hemp at the Crossroads is all about.
Okay, so we this will be our second one, and our focus is really to bring education, tools, and a networking opportunity to growers in the Midwest region. This year, we are expecting 300 to 400 attendees, and very excited about what we're going to be able to provide. We're going to have special guests there, the Lieutenant Governor of Indiana, as well as Ag Commissioner Ryan Quarles of Kentucky, who has been a leading advocate for the hemp industry since the early days. We also have three tracks of education opportunities. We'll have a cannabinoid track, we'll have a fiber and grain track, and then we'll have a hemp business track. And so people will be able to choose from numerous sessions, breakout sessions, which they can attend.
All right. So the last year, the event again was a very nice event, very large event, given that it was the first year. What kind of outlook do you have for this year, given that COVID has kind of kept everybody in their houses? Is everybody going to be ready to get out and attend this event?
We are getting a very warm reception. We're getting a lot of positive feedback. We understand people are hesitant, but we are going to remain optimistic that by February we're going to be in place, of course, we do have security measures in place. We're going to have masks readily available. Mm-hmm. There will be a very clean and sanitized environment, social distancing, if appropriate. So we'll just take that a little bit at a time. We do not believe a virtual format is appropriate. So if the time arrives and by state mandate we cannot gather, then we will just reschedule at a time that we can.
And Jamie, what are some of the topics? Maybe we can drill down a little bit and get to some of the topics that will be discussed. Will they be similar to last year's?
They will be similar. We're only going to have one day this year. We are going to try and fit a lot of information into one day. As I mentioned, we'll have a cannabinoid track, a fiber and grain track, and a hemp business track. But of course, we'll cover agronomy. We're going to have, we will have breakout sessions on university research, Purdue, Michigan State, Wisconsin, Illinois, and a few other universities that we're now talking with will be presenting and collaborating on their research. And then we've got business sessions, which will include business formation to fundraising, to marketing. And also we're excited to have an equity and diversity panel. And also animal feed and building materials. So we hope to cover, everything from seed to shelf specific to the growers and end users.
And of course, we had some great guests on the last Hemp at the Crossroads. I know you're still, a lot of that is still in the works, but can you talk about some of the folks, some of the experts that will be coming in and giving some knowledge?
Yes, we are working on that, but we have right now we've got people coming in from Montana, Colorado, Oregon, Tennessee, Kentucky, and I just urge you to stay tuned. We hope to be publishing a pretty close to final agenda by Monday. So we look forward to starting to release some information. We are proud to announce that we have two sponsors secured already. One is the Indiana Farm Bureau. Indiana Farm Bureau will be sponsoring the welcome reception on Thursday evening. So that's exciting. And then Bose Public Affairs, Bose McKinney Evans are sponsoring the lunch breakout on Friday. We are still looking for sponsors. We have some really generous packages and hope that people will take advantage of those. Exhibitors, we still are, we've got several exhibitors signed up, but are anxious to fill those. We only have approximately 20 to 24 exhibitor spots. So if you are interested, jump in. With that being said, Jason, December 15th is the cutoff for early bird registration.
All right.
So right now for anyone, both Midwest Hemp Council members or non-members, there is a discounted fee for attendance and for exhibiting if you register before December 15th. After that, the prices will go up. So be sure and go to MidwestHempCouncil.com, click on the tab Hemp at the Crossroads, and all the basic information will be there. And hopefully by Monday, we're going to have a nice presentation of the agenda for you, so you can get, you know, dig down a little deeper as to who will be available.
Yeah, and anyone that was at the first Hemp at the Crossroads knows it was a very it was a great event. There was a lot of people, a lot of vendors, and not just a lot of vendors, but a lot of vendors with some great information and some products that people were really turned on to. So it was really great to get everybody in that one place for those couple days and kind of let everybody get together. And again, after COVID, I'm sure people are just chomping at the bit to get together again and do it in a, you know, in a safe environment. And again, hopefully February will be a safe environment for us here in Indy.
I believe so. People, our members especially, might remember that we had an event that we teamed with Carlos Gonzalez of my CBD Edibles, and we had a networking event in Carmel. And people were, they came out in large numbers, and everyone had their mask on. It was sanitized, but people were so glad to be out of the house and be out of the house to do something, you know, not only the networking, and we had music and food, but, you know, to also move the industry forward. And that's the feedback we're getting. I mean, a lot of early responses and, you know, people very energized about being able to gather again. Once again, it's, you know, education, information, but it's also that networking. And we're going to be having a story. We'll have a section of storytelling where people are going to talk about how they built their business and how the network worked, you know, how they benefited from Midwest Hemp Council's networking.
Yeah, and again, virtual gatherings are great. They're very, you can get a lot of education and get a lot of information off of a virtual visit. But to be there, to look somebody in the eye, to be able to network and talk to people and turn and talk to another person, again, without it being a computer screen, I think we all maybe had taken that for granted. And I think that's something that will be very helpful.
I do. And Jason, one last comment from me. And one of the things we're so excited about is that we have gone to a new location, and it's the Embassy Suites Conference Center in Plainfield. And as most of our listeners will know, Plainfield is seconds from the Indianapolis airport, and the Embassy Suites runs a free shuttle back and forth to the airport. There are so many restaurant options in the area that are open currently. Mm-hmm. So, and let alone the Embassy Suites, for those who come to stay with us for Hemp at the Crossroads, they're going to have free breakfast. There's a free happy hour. So we're really excited about this location. It's very spacious and beautiful and provides all the services that our attendees and exhibitors and sponsors could ever want. Very professional location.
Well, I might just have to get a room just for the free breakfast and cocktail hour.
Exactly.
All right. Once again, Jamie Campbell Petty, Executive Director of the Midwest Hemp Council, always bringing the goods when she appears on the program. So again, we're looking about Monday for more information to pop up on the Midwest Hemp Council website, Jamie.
Yes. You should have a much more detailed agenda come Monday.
Fantastic. Once again, Jamie, always appreciate it, and we will talk to you soon.
Okay, Jason, thanks.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right, as we continue on, we're speaking with Ian Laird. Ian is the CFO and General Counsel for New Leaf Data Services. And Ian, we just had a conversation about how to pronounce data or data. And, you know, I can't even remember if I did it right, but how did I do? Is it data or data?
Well, I say data, but some say data.
Okay, tomato, tomato, whatever,
exactly.
Whatever works for you. So, although I typically say tomato, but at any rate, Ian, great to have you on the program. And let's just get started with what is New Leaf Data Services.
Okay, thanks, Jason. Thanks for having me, and thanks for everyone for listening in. New Leaf Data Services is a data analytics and market intelligence, business intelligence company. And we operate two divisions, cannabis benchmarks and hemp benchmarks. We founded the company in 2014 when we started getting into the legal cannabis business and realized there was no validated third-party pricing assessments for cannabis flower or trim in the various legal markets, which is obviously a key component to making any business decisions, investment decisions, looking at running financial models. My partner, co-founder Jonathan Rubin, came from a company, Standard & Poor's Global Platts. Platts is the leading what's called price reporting agency for energy and other commodities. And we had an opportunity to invest in a licensed cannabis facility in Connecticut that was under construction. And we realized that there was no validated price assessments for flower, which is what Jonathan had done for years at Platts. So we pulled together a team from Platts and launched Cannabis Benchmarks and started publishing our weekly price assessments and business intelligence market reports for cannabis back in April of 2015. In December of 2018, when cannabis became rec legal or adult use legal in Canada, we started our Canadian spot index and have been tracking the Canadian market since then. And in April 2019, we started publishing our monthly hemp benchmarks report. We'd been following the hemp market since 2015, obviously a very small market initially, but with the Farm Bill in 2018, we knew that the market would have a lot of new entrants, a lot of growth, and we were very intent on tracking pricing data for hemp biomass, dried flower, and extracted products, originally CBD. So we've been digging in over the past year and a half to hemp prices. We've seen the dramatic compression following kind of the green rush in 2019 and tracking very closely supply and demand of CBD, other minor cannabinoids, and also expanding our coverage into fiber and grain to provide the market with very clear data on wholesale prices.
And when you provide this data, where does it go? I mean, you put it out there. Who sees it? How do they see it? Where do they see it? Why do they see it? And what makes you guys, I guess, legitimate to be able to put that information out there? Is there anybody else doing that? You don't have to name other company names, but is this something exclusive to you guys?
Well, in cannabis, we're the only price reporting agency. In hemp, there are a couple of other folks who are also in the business, although not to the same level we are. But what we do is we use the same methodology that Platts and the other leading price reporting agencies use for other commodities. So we have a data refinery. We collect our prices from fields and boots in the field with our reporters, data reporters calling on producers, processors, purchasers. We have an extensive price contributor network with primarily subscribers to our reports providing us with biweekly or monthly transaction pricing. And we also scrape some data from some associations and from marketplace and exchanges. So we have a broad net to collect data. We started publishing our reports in April, as I said, gave it away for free until February, where we went behind a subscription model. Subscriptions, $1,800 a year, or monthly is $150. And we've onboarded hundreds of subscribers to our paid report since we started. We also have a free report, our Hemp Market Insider, that you can download from our website, hempbenchmarks.com. And we cover different areas of interest on a weekly basis. A very interesting report we published recently was we took a map of the disastrous wildfires in Oregon in September and overlaid another map of the registered acreage in Oregon to see what kind of impact the fires may have had on hemp supply in 2020. And we came up with the data that 20% of the acreage in the two most hemp-concentrated counties in Oregon, Jackson and, can't remember the other one, sorry.
No, it's all right.
But about 20% of the registered hemp acreage were in evacuation zones, and of course a lot were going to be impacted by ash contamination. So certainly will have an impact on the dried flower, particularly the dried flower production in Oregon. One of the drivers of price is obviously supply and demand. So we've taken a very deep dive on the supply of hemp biomass, primarily for cannabinoids, CBD, and now CBG is becoming increasingly popular this year.
Right.
Through 2019 to 2020.
Well, we've certainly heard the stories where a lot of farmers still have, you know, the hemp, you know, hanging in their barns and nowhere to sell it, or they had contracts, the contracts fell through. So it would be interesting to see the data on that and see what we're looking at and how much of that is out there.
There is certainly a huge overhang of biomass left over from the 2019 harvest. One processor recently told us they had tens of millions of pounds of biomass in storage, which is kind of astounding. The biomass does degrade with time if you don't refrigerate it. So a lot of that biomass in the overhang from 2019 we don't think is really going to be processable and will be either written off or diverted to lower value usages like animal bedding.
At what point would the farmers make that decision to go ahead and basically destroy the crop?
I think a lot of already have. A lot of the smaller guys already have. They just don't have the storage capacity.
Do you find a lot of people out there that probably should go ahead and go ahead and destroy the crop, but can't bring themselves to do it?
Yeah, if your CBD is down to 2, 4, 5%, you probably should. On the fiber side, a data point from this year's harvest is that there was about 1,700 acres of hemp grown for fiber in Indiana that was left to rot in the field or wasn't harvested because the farmers had no place to process it into textiles or other fiber based end products.
So your data for all this, how is this going to help the farmers or growers, or what's the point of that data?
Well, we think it's important for folks to have an idea of, you know, when they make a decision to invest in growing, how much supply is actually needed to meet the market demand. When we started looking at registered acreage in 2019, there were 570,000 acres of hemp registered across the country. This year there was 400,000, so down roughly 30%. Last year we projected that about 260,000 acres were actually planted. This year, based on data from the USDA Farm Service Administration's reports, which don't count all the hemp that's produced out there, but captures a good percentage of it. 91,000 acres were planted this year. We think that number is probably really more like 110,000 acres, so a significant drop in planted acreage from last year. Last year, we projected that about 35% of the planted acres were actually harvested and processable. You know, you had bad genetics, you had pests, you had weather, and then you had some hot plants that had to be destroyed. So the farmers faced, I think, a lot more challenges than they anticipated. This year, the weather was better, generally. Last year, Oregon had a very wet harvest season. This year, the harvest season was terrific. Plants were doing great until the wildfires, which were, clearly disastrous,
right?
With a, you know, both for agriculture and for the folks out there. And Colorado, which is a major producer, had early snows, which took out a lot of the crops and wildfires as well. But Midwest had a growing season, good growing season. Northeast had a good growing season. Still, we see a number of issues for farmers actually bringing in their harvest. So we anticipated out of that 110,000 acres, about 50% is actually harvested and processable. So about 55,000 acres.
Now, obviously, COVID would have no effect on the farmers planting, harvesting, that sort of thing. But the usage, let's say the CBD, growing for CBD, is there a point where we'll know if people are consuming more CBD, if the market's going, if the market is growing or not, or if it's growing because of COVID or because of the COVID era? Is that something that could spike and then dip once people get back to, let's call it, reality in 2021?
A good question. I think COVID did impact the number of acres that were planted this year. I think farmers may have been more conservative, maybe a little bit more cash constrained, and certainly there were labor issues related to COVID and being able to move folks around to both plant and harvest. On the demand side for CBD, it's clear that COVID did have an impact, particularly on the brick and mortar stores. Online sales for all the major publicly traded CBD companies increased dramatically, but overall sales generally declined. A couple of the major publicly traded CBD companies that actually report their data, if you look at Charlotte's Web, revenues were down 14% sequentially.
Mm-hmm.
CV Sciences revenues in the second quarter went from $16 million to $5 million, just a complete collapse. But on the other hand, MyCBD revenues actually increased a bit. So the companies that had robust e-commerce platforms saw more business go direct to consumer, but the companies that didn't really suffered. I think there was also an impact. CBD is, you need an educational component to it. People need to know what they might be able to use it for and how much they should take. And it's hard to get that information online. You really need what in the cannabis space would be called a bud tender to help guide you through the purchasing process. The major impact we think that's stifling CBD demand is the failure for the FDA to promulgate rules and regulations that will make it clear for some of the major consumer packaging good companies to get into the space. We know that Pepsi and all the other guys have an interest and have been looking around, but until the FDA acts, they're not going to take the risk of starting incorporating this into the product line.
Once again, we're speaking with Ian Laird. Ian is the CFO and General Counsel for New Leaf Data Services. And where are you located, Ian?
We are a virtual firm. Our head office is in Stamford, Connecticut. I'm based in Bedford, New York, an hour north of New York City. But most of our team's in Boulder or Denver, and we have our head of Canadian data operations in Calgary.
Now, Ian, you discussed earlier in the conversation that you guys got started well before the 2018 Farm Bill. Was it after the 2014 during that 4-year window there, or before?
We were tracking the hemp markets since we started in 2014. I have a long term interest in hemp with a background in pulp and paper. But it was really a couple $100 million market on the CBD side. It wasn't really until 2018 that the market started really developing.
Sure.
Obviously oversupplied, but a huge green rush, a ton of interest and invested dollars, and big dollars coming out of the 2018 harvest. But we've seen a complete collapse in pricing. Pricing stabilized at relatively low levels for the extracted products, for full spectrum distillate, THC-free distillate. But biomass continues to weaken. As people try to burn off the, the 2019 harvest.
Mm-hmm. Well, what made you get involved in as early as 2014? Again, Kentucky was growing, but it was not catching on, of course, throughout the United States until 2018. So you made an investment, started a company. What drew you to that, and what drew you to the hemp market that early on?
Well, it was kind of a just a side of the overall cannabis market. When I say cannabis now, I refer really to marijuana,
mm-hmm.
and hemp is hemp. But my partner Jonathan and I had been doing clean tech financings. My background is a lawyer, investment banker, private equity investor, and spent a good portion of my career in doing renewable energy projects and other sustainable projects. Mm-hmm. So hemp's always been on my radar screen as a plant-based alternative for a lot of end products. But it was really the emerging cannabis market that got us excited initially. Mm-hmm. So we came in on the cannabis side, tracking prices in the 18 legal non-vertical markets and now Canada, getting some international pricing. But hemp was really an offshoot of that effort, using the same data team and the same methodology that we've used in our cannabis business.
Now, Ian, you stated that you certainly think that the market will be a little softer in 2021. I shouldn't put words into your mouth. Do you think the market will be softer in 2021 as compared to 2020? Or again, with COVID in there, it just kind of makes everything, you know, it turns everything upside down. But where do you see it headed here in the next year?
Well, our assessment for this year is that the supply will be down 50%. The market will still be oversupplied, perhaps by twofold for CBD. But we're seeing increased interest in what I call traditional industrial hemp, which is fiber and grain. Hemp seed is a terrific food supplement. The Canadians have dominated that market, which is relatively small, but we see more farmers planting hemp for grain and some of the infrastructure being redeveloped. We think long-term fiber will be the largest market by a good measure. But we've lost all of the infrastructure and processing capability for fiber over the last 60 years or whatever it is of prohibition, 70 mm-hmm. years. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take time to reestablish the processing, both engineering and facilities. Probably almost $1 billion was invested between 2017 and 2019 in CBD processing facilities using CO2 or cryoethanol. Hardly anything's been invested in fiber processing. So it's going to take a little while longer to develop that supply chain where we can supply the Levi Strausses and the Patagonias mm-hmm. with textiles. But that's certainly where the future is going to be.
All right. Again, Ian Laird. Ian, anything else we need to add to this conversation?
Well, yeah, I think that for the market participants, it's been a rocky road. We know that, for some guys, there's been a world of hurt. But we are firm believers in the long-term viability and attractiveness of the market. Supply and demand will reach equilibrium. I think people need to be cautious. Farmers shouldn't plant unless they know who's going to process it, and processors shouldn't process until they know probably who's going to buy it.
Uh-huh.
So you got to get rid of kind of that field of dreams mentality, make hard business decisions. But we're big believers in hemp. We think it's going to be a very valuable agricultural crop for American farmers and farmers around the world. And we just got to be patient, pace ourselves, and over the next 5 to 10 years, we think a lot of good things are going to happen.
And Ian, where can people get more information on New Leaf Data Services?
Well, we can go to hempbenchmarks.com or cannabisbenchmarks.com. Download our free reports, follow us, call us. We have a support email that we respond to people. We want to get to know as many people in the industry as possible. We're networking constantly. There are a lot of people out there involved in the market, a lot of smart people, and we rely on them for a lot of our data and market insights. Hopefully, collectively, we can give people a clearer view of what's going out there in the field.
Fantastic. Once again, Ian Laird, CFO and General Counsel, New Leaf Data Services. And I believe you have converted me from data to data. I think in the last 20 minutes, I've made that conversion.
It's worth the 20 minutes.
Fantastic. Ian, thanks
so
much.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, some great information there. We hope to get you back on the program again soon.
Anybody who's listening, and feel free to contact me through the support button on our link on our website, and look forward to meeting a lot more of you folks.
And again, that website is?
Hempbenchmarks.com.
Once again, Ian, thanks so much. We will talk to you soon.
Yes, great, Jason. Thanks.
All right.
Take care.
Thanks, Ian. And that's going to do it for this week's show. The Midwest Hemp Council podcast is brought to you by the Hoosier Hempster Dispensary in New Albany, Indiana, and owners Joe and Kelly Lenny. You can find more information about the Hoosier Hempster Dispensary at HoosierHempster.com. If you'd like more information about the Midwest Hemp Council, please go to our website, MidwestHempCouncil.com, and find out how you can get involved, volunteer, and become a member. Thanks again for tuning in, and remember to tell a friend about the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier, and we'll see you next time. So long, everybody.